this time, I'd like to introduce those who we have missed. And by way of checking and by introduction, the Honorable Willie Brown, Jr. of San Francisco from the 18th District. Willie Brown. From the 19th Assembly District from San Francisco, one of our veteran legislators, the Honorable Charles Martin. said, "Madam, I want you to know that I'm an honest salesman. I'm going to tell you both the advantages and the disadvantages of buying this home." First with the disadvantages. Now, three blocks to the north, there's an oil refinery. Two blocks on the east, there's a Hyde and Tallow Works. Just to the south, there's an automobile plant. And over on the west, we have some stockyards. By now, the woman was horrified, but with great strength, she moved ahead and said, "Well, all right, what are the advantages?" He said, "Well, you can always tell what way the wind is blowing." I have both a disadvantage and an advantage in introducing our guest tonight. I think it's quite apparent that the disadvantage is that by being given this assignment, which I privilege, I am precluded from giving a speech. If I were going to give a speech, it would be sort of the ABCs and the 1As that I'd like to talk about and your efforts on behalf of both of those two things. The advantage, of course, is that you always recognize a speaker in computing the length of your introduction. The more prestigious the personage, the shorter the introduction, so I didn't have to prepare very long for this introduction. I think I can best present him to you by mentioning a couple of quotations that I think illustrates the kind of philosophy and the program that he is bringing to Sacramento and to our state government. Aristotle said that even when laws have been written down, they ought not to always remain unaltered. I think Mr. Reagan and his administration will give a thorough review and a revision and change where necessary in existing laws. During the course of his campaign to be elected governor of California and in his inaugural address, he mentioned his concept or idea of the creative society. Creativity is the art of taking a fresh, clean look at old knowledge. I can assure you that the governor intends to do just that very thing. I think there's also something else that can be best illustrated by the story of the guest minister that was invited to deliver a sermon, and it happened to occur at the end of a week of unbearably hot weather, and Sunday turned out to be the hottest day of the entire week. And recognizing this, the minister said, "I'm going to preach a very short sermon. If you think it's hot here, you just have to wait." Governor's found that it's a little bit hot in Sacramento in the course of the 8 days of his tenure. But I hasten to tell you that steel is tempered with heat, and forging of items into usable design requires intense heat also. I'm sure out of this heat you will find an amazing man and a fine governor good administration. My short acquaintance with him, I found him to be a man of unusual insight. I can assure you also that he is a man of great concern for education in this state. I'm most honored to present to you California's 33rd governor, the Honorable Ronald Reagan.
Understood that the function of someone making introductions there of this kind was to be so dull that those who followed and were introduced would appear brilliant by contrast. You have failed dismally. Fellow members of the administration, the legislature, ladies and gentlemen of the California Teachers Association, ladies and gentlemen of the press, the bus will be leaving right. Oh no, the campaign's over. I have to apologize, George, for the fact you introduced. two of us and only one of us came in. You're 24 hours ahead of Nancy. We still have one that has to finish out a semester. So we're doing a little commuting. I am accompanied by familiar faces here, not only from the administration, but I have the pleasure of meeting your executive secretary, Jack Reese, some time ago and having a fine visit with him. I appreciated this. I know that education, which should be the subject of this evening's few remarks by me, is a very broad subject. And therefore, I'm sure you will understand that it's only in the interest of time that I confine myself to those parts of education that stop short of the university and college system. To get some comfort from the story of a man who was going down the road one day with his son leading a burro. And they met a man who said to them, "Don't you realize you shouldn't both be walking on this hot day? You have that burro. One of you at least should be riding." So the father thought it was a good idea and put his son on the burro, continued to lead the burro until they met another man. The other man said, "Don't you realize the burro was a beast of burden? Perfectly capable of carrying both of you. There's no reason why either one of you should walk." And they both got on and rode until they met another man who said, "How can you do that on a hot day like this? How can you be so cruel to a poor dumb animal? The two of you should be carrying the burro." Well, they tied his feet together, slung him over a pole, put it on their shoulders, and down the road. And then they came to a bridge. And starting across the bridge, this unaccustomed and concentrated load, the bridge collapsed, and they were plunged into the torrent down below. They both managed to make it to shore, but the burro with his feet tied together drowned. The moral is, you can lose your burro trying to please everyone. There's another version of that. I'm sure that you're wondering many things, not only about me, but about what kind of an administration I'm going to bring to the state. And I think this is normal and to be expected. After a campaign that's as heated and lengthy as the one we've just been through, however, a candidate sometimes indulges himself in the fallacy that everyone must be aware of his stand, his philosophy of government, and in this case, his approach to education. Of course, this isn't so. First, because even with the miracle of electronic communications, it's impossible to reach and personally regale even a fraction of the populace with your many charms and virtues. And second, because at the same time, due to the nature of the campaign, there are others abroad who are more or less vocal with a somewhat different evaluation of those charms and virtues. Now, there's one label that I do accept out of all that have been applied recently. I'm a Republican. But I'm a Republican without a hyphen. I'm neither a left or a right or a mainstream or even over there in the ripples and the shallows Republican. It's my belief in being that the party which I represent is polarized around a policy of adherence to constitutional limits on the power of government. Fiscal responsibility, and the idea that government, to be effective, must be kept close, and to be just, must be kept close to the people. And that includes that segment of government known as public education. Now, let it also be understood that I'm a firm believer in public education. We have been brought together tonight, I think all of us, because we have a share in common with the idea of we have here the greatest public school system in all the world. Now, this might come as a surprise to some of you, and I wouldn't wonder at that, because I've heard a few of my own words come back at me considerably out of context. For example, some of you might have heard or read that I'm a fellow did say something similar. I said education is the bulwark of freedom, but removed too far from the control of parents and local government, it can become the tool of tyranny. Now, public education, in my opinion, is the responsibility of state and local government. I believe that a diversity in education makes for a strong overall educational system. And I believe it minimizes the danger of an educational system becoming a propaganda system. This brings me to my position with regard to federal aid to education. Now, I'm only too aware that the federal government has preempted much of the tax base. And this has made it necessary for us to turn to the federal government for aid. And since the federal government created the need in the first place, it follows that the federal government has a responsibility to help meet that need. And in truth, it would seem that they're doing just that. Except that when we have federal aid to education, when it's forthcoming, the gift is not unconditional. It comes with some strings attached. This is a country that was founded on the idea that when a lower echelon of government has difficulty meeting its responsibility, the next higher echelon of government has a responsibility to try to help, in whatever way it can, that lower echelon accomplish its purpose. It does not have a responsibility to automatically take all the authority and the function away from that lower echelon of government. We in California, I believe, know better than a bureau or an agency in Washington what the educational needs are of California. But by the same token, we in Sacramento should recognize that you at the district level know better than we do the problems and the needs of your district. Now, one of the reasons that school districts have a financial problem, perhaps, is because in recent years, Sacramento has imposed conditions and requirements on the local districts without at the same time providing the money to pay for those programs and for those requirements. Consequence, though, our state support of public schools has dropped as low in some areas as 27%, and in the overall average for the state, I understand the figure is 37%. Now, I hope that we will be able to restore the historic 50-50 ratio. Now I have to ask everyone to be a little patient. We're in a very deep hole, and first, we must climb out. I'm sure that some of you have heard some whispered rumors. We're going to do everything we can to solve this problem because there are so many things that need doing. And there are none of us here, regardless of party lines, either in the legislature or in the administration, who do not want to get at the job of doing these things that do need doing. Now, there is not least among these problems the problem of teachers' retirement. No provision has been made for a cost of living increase. A teacher who retired 10 years ago finds today that inflation alone has cut the income by 23%, and it continues to go down as inflation continues, and a provision must be made to meet this particular problem. We're not only aware of this, but we're aware also of the problem of that 50% of our teacher staff that comes to us from other states. And we must and will find an answer for the provisions that are necessary for their retirement program. The Fisher bill, with an admitted noble goal of improving the quality of teachers, hasn't worked out as well as could be hoped by those who passed it. Recruitment problems have multiplied, and now we must review what changes are needed if we're to have enough qualified and dedicated teachers. Now, let me return briefly to the area of finance. The state must bear a fair share and a larger share of the school costs. bring relief to the property taxpayer in so doing, and bring an end to what has become virtually a taxpayer's revolt. Bond issues based on sound policy have been voted down by people who are simply expressing in the only way left open to them their objection to the ever-growing cost of government. I'm sure that they in their own hearts and minds know the justification for many of these issues, but as I say, they only have one way of expressing a disapproval in this one area. This is why all of us must have some patience and must cooperate to achieve a sane fiscal position. We cannot continue to build. Education must be sustained and improved, and money to make this possible must come from a system of taxation whereby all the citizens bear equitably a share of this burden. Much as I may wish to learn about the intricate details of California's vast educational system, I'm sure that no one person has or can have a complete knowledge of the school system that's been designed to educate millions of young people, children, and adults, and a program that's costing billions of dollars a year. Nor can one man find the answer to all the problems by himself. I will seek the advice and the counsel of many. But high on the list will be the counsel of those who teach. I depended on you for too many years for the answers to quit now. But I want to see more problems solved at the local level. I want to see teachers, administrators, and school board members working together with regard to curriculum, selection of textbooks, student discipline, assignments, salaries, and benefits. I think all of us are aware of the problems that I think are being improved, but that only a few years ago so desperately needed attention, the problem of teachers' pay. I don't know whether we could ever reach as much as a teacher should receive. Every parent knows on every Saturday afternoon, teachers are underpaid. But I'm sure that most adults carry through life and are influenced by a memory of at least one standout teacher. I know that this is true of me. I question whether this would have been true. I know it wouldn't be true of me, and I wouldn't perhaps have that same memory or have that influence if I had seen that teacher in a picket line engaged in a strike. You are professionals, and I believe it's wrong for you to strike. If this is true, then it's equally wrong for a school board to ignore the counsel of educators and not meet with them in a mutual atmosphere of good faith to arrive at a fair answer with regard to the problems of professional pay and working conditions. You know, talking about some of these things and about my concern of government power, I've been accused of being too fearful of the power of government. But I don't think that any of us should rule out as extremism of one kind or another a reasonable concern that government should always be aware that its power is no more than the people give it. What I must not do, government must not do. And let me illustrate this idea, perhaps why I'm fearful, with a little item that came to my attention that appeared in the press recently. Catherine B. Ottinger, who's the chief of the Children's Bureau of the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare in Washington, has written a letter, quite widespread, soliciting subscriptions to the Bureau's journal. The journal is entitled Children. And in this letter, Ms. Ottinger said, articles in the journal are by specialists in child development, mental health, child welfare, education-related fields, and so forth. And then in the letter, she goes on to say, because most of these specialists are not associated with the federal government, these articles reflect their free opinions. Now, is it impossible for us to maybe envision or dream of a day when specialists, even those associated with the federal government, will be able to reflect their free opinion? How hollow rings the cry someone who says, well, I agree with your position, but publicly, I must come out against it. Children learn by example. Nowhere. The understanding, mutual respect, and the cooperation more essential as an example than in our schools, the place which society has established for the teaching of its young. And this training must encompass more than reading and writing and arithmetic. I think that school is a place for training and discipline and responsibility. And yes, if we carried on with all of the things, I believe in love for country. I don't say that in any narrow chauvinistic sense, but I think that it's proper to instill devotion to the dreams that are as old as mankind, the dreams that have advanced farther here in this country of ours than in any society heretofore known to man. School is a place to learn basic morality without which no society can exist. I know this is supposed to be the prime duty of the home, but sometimes the home fails, and even when it doesn't, I think that school and home should not be working at cross purposes. They should be working together